The creator of Copperface Jack's the Musical is Paul Howard. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Joe.
Great to see you.
Great to be here. Yeah.
There's a mythology around Copperface Jack's in some respects.
I mean, it's a mythology, but not in the sense that none of it is true.
Yeah, it's
all true.
It's all true.
All of the myths you hear about Copperface Jack's aren't myths at all. I mean, it's Ireland's most famous nightclub, and I suppose that's for a reason, because everybody, I think, you know, I always feel that if you sort of stood in Copperface Jack's for long enough, you'd probably meet just about everybody you'd ever met in your life, because everybody's passed through it at some point.
Except me.
You've never been.
I've never been to Copperface Jack's.
Well, you know, your life is less for that.
It probably is. And that's not out of any, I just never, it never happened.
It never
so
came
to speak.
Up.
I never sort of, someone never said, will we go to Copper's? And I said, no, it just never sort of, I don't know, never sort of came up.
It's funny because the last time I was in here, I was in reception and somebody mentioned Copper's, and they said, yeah, you know, we were dragged there on our Christmas party, or we ended up there in our Christmas party, and nobody, it's almost like nobody sets out at the start of the evening to go there,
but
it's something that happens to you in the course of your evening. You will go eventually, Joe. You'll be dragged in.
Oh, I don't know about that. I have a bit of a half-baked theory that Copperface Jack's was relatively famous, you know, in the nightclub scene in Dublin, as a place where people who aren't from Dublin would go, because they'd meet people from different counties, and it had that kind of rural person in Dublin feel about it. But I think, was it Brian Cullen, captain of the 2011 Dublin All-Ireland winning, when he said in his speech at the end, I'll see us all in Coppers.
Yeah.
To me, that seemed to just catapulted to a
new
level.
I mean, there's two incidents really.
So why were all the Dubs gone?
Well, they were going to Reynard's and Lily's and all these other kind of trendy Celtic Tiger clubs that were shuttered within about, you know, an hour of the economy crashing, you know. And I think one of the reasons Coppers was so popular during the Celtic Tiger period, and then afterwards as well, is that it never had those notions about itself. You know, it never ever took itself seriously.
Right.
You wouldn't go in there and see, you know, guys who look like male models, like checking themselves out in the glass.
The size of a goldfish ball. Right?
Yeah, which is, well, yeah, it's one of my bugbears, actually, the way they've fetishized the gin. Why can't you just buy a gin and tonic?
Just get in a Slim Jim, please.
It would
I don't
never
want to
happen.
Swim in it. I'm not going to dive and do five lengths in my glass of gin. Anyway, sorry.
My wife had she ordered a gin and tonic recently, and it took
about half a kilo of vegetables in it.
Well, it took about an hour to prepare the thing. It was like watching, you know,
Ready, Rowan
Atkinson in Love Actually wrapped the present, but they had to go upstairs to get the rosemary, and she said, no, look, it's fine, I'll do it without the rosemary. No, we'll go up to the kitchen. So anyway, it took about 20 minutes to get the thing, and when she took a sip of it, she realised they'd forgotten to put the gin in.
Ah, come on.
And that's the way it's gone. But such things would never happen
in Copper's Jack's. Let's go to the start of the story, because it was a long time in the making. I believe it was 6 years in the making, and it was the kind of thing that started out as a joke, but weaved in at the start of the story of this musical is Anglo the Musical, which never happened.
It did happen, but there were some legal issues,
no?
There were huge legal issues. I mean, at some point between me writing the script for Anglo and us beginning rehearsals, there were charges against three of the former directors in the bank, which put us in a kind of potential contempt of court situation, because we, even though there were books written about Anglo and people could buy them freely at the time, acres of newspaper coverage, this was something new, and it was considered, because we were going to be telling jokes using puppets and music on a stage, that we could potentially influence a juror in the trial more than they'd been influenced, for instance, by all the books they'd read or the newspaper coverage. So they took a sledgehammer really to try to crush a nut, and so we had, you know, letters from two of the defendants in the case, solicitor's letters, you know, sent kind of maybe two a week, telling us not to go ahead. The director of public prosecutions got involved, insisted that we make changes. The night before we opened, we made changes to 14 different scenes.
All very heavy-handed.
It was incredibly heavy-handed, and we opened with, you know, in front of me there were solicitors writing down the jokes on legal pads, on yellow legal pads. So it was incredibly stressful. We had, I mean, as well as that, we had the sort of the threat of possibly going to jail, losing our homes, all of this thing. We all had to get solicitors, and it was between legal meetings that Darren Smith, the one of the co-producers of the show said to me, we should have just done Copperface Jacks the musical.
Right.
And it was a joke. I mean, the whole thing started as a joke.
It was a joke, but it's certainly, it's show business and it's not a joke anymore, and it's a very real thing. At what point, tell us about the moment where the writing began, it progressed, you knew you had something.
Well, I got so excited when I heard the idea 6 years ago that I immediately went home and wrote a kind of outline proposal of what the show was about. And so it was essentially the story of a girl from Carrick-Sylvain, County Kerry, who dreams of one day coming to Dublin to work in the VHI claims department, and she does. And while she's in Dublin, she goes to Copperface Jacks and falls in love with Gino Wiles, who is the captain of the Dublin football team. So that was the outline I wrote at the time.
Right.
But like anything, it takes, you know, especially in theatre, it takes years and years to put it together. I suppose we went through, a post-Anglo phase where I didn't really have the appetite to write another musical for a while. But then about a year ago, it just started to happen. Darren rang me and said, listen, we think we've got investors for the show, and
that'll always change how you feel, I suppose, will it? Or, you know.
Well, yeah.
For now, I've got motivation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it does. And I suppose it's confidence, someone else believes in the show, and then suddenly it's work, you know. Yeah. Then you're told this is happening, and it's happening in 8 months' time. People, so you better write it.
People will know you from the creator of Ross O'Carroll Kelly. The difference in writing a musical as opposed to books, fiction, and like the dialogue, I've always felt in the Ross O'Carroll Kelly books is really sharp and witty and you know.
Well, thank you.
Really effective, like you fly through it and you're chuckling away. Was there a big discipline change for you for writing, when it came to writing a musical?
Yeah, I mean, when you write for the stage, the jokes have to be clearer. You know, you can't have
nuance,
any sort of
subtlety.
Slow burners. Yeah. That you know, when you're reading a book, and I know it myself, when I read comedy books, I'll go back and I'll kind of read a line again, and I say, oh, that's what he was getting at there. In a theater, if a joke is missed, it's lost, it's gone, because you're on to the next thing. And I mean, I suppose it's exactly the same thing when you're writing for television as well, that the jokes just have to be not obvious, but just clear to the audience.
Yeah.
That was a thing with this, and especially when you're doing them in songs as well, you know, if you have a funny line in a song, if it's too subtle, you might as well not have the line at all.
It'll be gone.
It'll be gone. So
right.
I think that was the biggest difference. And of course, I'm writing with Coppers, I'm writing about a completely different world to the Ross O'Carroll.
The opposite
world.
In some
it
ways.
Is a lot,
socially
yeah.
and,
yeah.
you know, all that kind of thing
yeah.
in terms
yeah.
of the people and where they're from. Are you in danger of stereotyping people at all, Paul? You know,
people stereotype themselves, you know.
That's true.
And you come in and sort of reflect that, you know. You know, stereotypes are like cliches. A lot of them exist because they're actually true. And people do find, if they are stereotypes, people do find them funny, you know. People like to have a mirror held up to them and shown, this is what you do.
I have a clip of a little bit of music from the musical. Nice bit of tempo to it. People will be dancing in the aisles. Did you write music as well, or just lyrics?
I wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
And Paul Woodfull and Dave McEwen wrote
the Joshua
music.
Trio.
Yeah,
Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ding Dong Denny O'Reilly as well. And Dave McEwen, who worked on Anglo, the musical with me, they did the music. So the way it worked is I would come up with an idea for a song. Quite often it was a song that had already been written by Andrew Lloyd Webber. Like, you know, I'd sort of sing a song and they'd say, yeah, that's Memory from Cats or something. But I would have an idea for a chorus, or it might be a hook or something. Mm. And then they would sort of come up with a tune for it and then suggest a verse. And then they'd email me the verse, the tune, and I would write lyrics to fit the verse. So it was kind of, a lot of it was done unusually by kind of email, you know, sending MP3s back and forth.
But it seems there's plenty of support to enable you to kind of write in that medium.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We did it over the course of about 6 months. So there was a lot of time to get it right, you know. And and then I went to, they both have studios, you know, and then I went to their studios and we sort of discussed the songs and broke them down and kind of decided when, you know, a line might be a syllable too long for the meter of the line.
It's quite technical, doesn't it?
It's very, very technical, and especially when you're trying to be funny as well.
Yeah.
And you're told that's two syllables too long. You're looking and thinking, I have to drop this line.
That's going to crush your spirit. It promises to be great crack. It really does. Copperface Jack's the musical. It's at the Olympia until the 12th of August. If you're listening to the Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show this morning, he was doing a call out for a Garda, a nurse and a teacher to go along and review it and talking about stereotypes and come back and review it on the show. So make sure you tune in to Ian tomorrow morning. Opening night tonight. Paul Howard, thanks a million for coming in.
Thanks so much
and the best of luck. I hope it goes really well.